The reason why everyone's willing to fuck is because they need warmth from a body. Because of, like, it's just like no apartment or flat is proper there. Like JJ lived in a place that another friend of ours lived in, and his bedroom, like, you had to walk through his bedroom to get to the kitchen.
And it's true. I didn't have a bedroom next to the kitchen.
And it was a steal. That was a deal. Like, it was like everyone reminds me, like, this place is great.
It was huge.
Oh my God.
Huge place. The only problem was you had to go through a bedroom to get to the kitchen.
Yeah, we're talking UK travel.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's what we do here at the Standby Podcast with JJ and Francisco, talking about travel. And we have an amazing guest today. You're going to travel to the Edinburgh Comedy, the famous Edinburgh Comedy Festival.
Indeed. At the Edinburgh. Well, because JJ, you've been. Francisco, have you ever been?
No, I haven't been there.
What do you think it is? What do you think it's like?
I think it's like, you know, when, like, people dress up as like knights and guards, and then
there.
They go like, "I will knight you," and then they like they're make believe, but they're all virgins.
Yes,
like, they never fuck.
Yeah,
you know?
No, but it's almost the opposite.
Okay. No, I
the
know.
The only country in the world where there are still virgins is America. Like, let me say this about Europe. There's a lot of gross people. They're fucking.
Everybody's
like,
fucking.
Like, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trousers down. Let's go.
There's not a lot of second guessing.
Oh, my God. There is. I wouldn't even say there's any guessing.
Is this why? Because of the culture of, like, Vikings raping each other?
I don't know if it's culturally raped into them.
Yeah, I don't know if it was specifically from a man with a horned hat showing up on the beach and they're, this guy looks like he... No, I don't think sexual assault plays into it necessarily. I
think it's just an attitude towards life.
Well, I would say it's a country that has gone through its need to be religiously pure, right, which America never had, because America never had a reformation or any intense religious wars. Don't worry, they're coming. And so it now is a place which is a little bit more hedonistic. It's also just way more drunk.
But also people that came here was because they were running away from that, right? They were like looking, they're like, hey, we want to have like the Puritans that came here and all that
well,
stuff.
Yeah,
like,
no, they wanted stricter religious.
The Puritans were like, we want all this other stuff. And they were like, guys.
We want to fuck.
That's
too.
Bumming me out. Yeah. All right, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of one night stands and then ghosting in Europe.
It's interesting. I think
isn't that what the whole point of one night stand is?
No, I don't like I don't like a ghost one. I've had very few one night stands.
But you want like somebody to be like, hey, we had a great time. That's what you want?
You do a quick follow-up.
Yeah,
hope you got home. Hope you're all right.
To me, that's not ghosting.
Then that's not ghosting. No.
That's being a gentleman.
As I understand what ghosting is, and maybe I'm incorrect, which is like, you know, you're hanging out, you see him a couple of times, and then just disappear.
Yeah.
Like this was clearly not like, I live in another city.
Feeling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were just saying about like after you have the one night stand and then it's like, I don't want to see it anymore. It's like, yeah, it's a one night stand. You know, that's.
Yeah, I was trying to say it quicker, but yes.
I think you.
A lot of times
you
know,
a one night stand.
You have sex with somebody and you can tell the conversation with them is that I don't know if I want to go out with them again. And in America, there's a lot more steps. There's a lot more dating and courting. You court.
You're talking about before having sex? So you're saying in Europe is like, hey, what's up? You want to have sex?
Here's what it is. Is the main difference is the level of presumptive alcohol consumption is so much greater that there is sort of in America, if you're going on a date, the assumption isn't you're gonna be hungover the next day.
Yeah.
When I was dating in the UK, like everyone was like, well, you're probably going to be messed up some more. You're meeting a human being at 7 p.m., so you'll probably be out very late no matter – like that's sort of the difference. Yeah. It's just a much looser – Say John's name. My name is John Hastings.
Yeah, you were supposed to.
We were getting there. We're talking about sex. We're getting excited.
It's going to say his name on the header. We're good.
So is this a thing now that like guests are reading the scripted messages that are not supposed to be
said out loud? Guys, I'm going to say this right now. Your podcast is as professional as all other podcasts.
Yeah. That's our goal. That's
what we want. We want to get to the point.
But I mean, I like that you guys have a studio. This is fun. I like the baffling.
Yeah, we have a thing that nobody's, you know.
I like this. I like that you guys, for a podcast about traveling, you guys have made a stationary one place location. That's very small. I like the photos of you guys.
Look, see, down there's a plane.
There's a plane. Yeah. And a barcode.
And the barcode. It's like a ticket. Yes. So let's go back to the one night stand.
Go ahead.
No, because actually it's funny because, like, if you guys think, like, here is, like, harder, like, or you think, you know, like, then you move to Latin America, you know, like, it, you know, just talking more about Venezuela, it's even harder to have a one-night stand over there. Because if it's like you really literally has to be going out with a girl. It has to be my girlfriend to actually have sex. You know, from what I remember.
Is that why the stereotype of South American men is that they will shout at any woman? Is because there's no one-night stand, so they're just...
Yeah.
They're trying to get their, like, repressed, like, insanity out any way that they
exactly.
can.
Exactly. But which is fun because, yeah, the stereotype is like, hey, what's pasa? But then nobody's fucking that much. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Because when we moved here, I have friends that when came here to visit and moved here from Venezuela, and they were like... Wow, this is so easy. Like, we can dance and all these girls let us touch you. You know, like, we can dance and they don't, you know, over there it's more like conservative. You know?
It's so interesting, right. too.
So it's kind of like, I guess it goes like from.
Wait
like,
until you go to Britain.
Oh my God, Francisco. Do you, like, it's.
Well, I'm getting married.
Great. And have love in your life.
Congratulations.
And you're avoiding HPV. Like, I don't understand, like, what. It's also this sort of thing of like, and it's, listen, I am a married and divorced man, but it's always that very funny thing when people are like, I can't go to England and fuck a bunch of strangers because I'm getting married. And it's like, you found the person that all those people that are fucking the strange are looking for.
Yeah.
And also, like, let's be real. Like, it's very fun in the lead up, but there are so many moments, especially just waking up in a damp room somewhere in
damp.
London, damp and wet.
Like, are you, is this like the Sherwood? Like the Sherwood?
No, it's just
where you've wound up.
It's just what houses are like in Europe.
Oh.
The reason why everyone's willing to fuck is because they need warmth from a body. Because of, like, it's just like no apartment or flat is proper there. Like JJ lived in a place that another friend of ours lived in, and his bedroom, like, you had to walk through his bedroom to get to the kitchen. And
it's true. I didn't have a bedroom next to the kitchen.
And it was a steal. That was a deal. Like, everyone reminds me, like, this place is great.
It was huge.
Oh my God.
It was a huge place. The only problem was you had to go through a bedroom to get to the kitchen.
It was the best. And luckily, the guy that lived there with you, I think, survived on tea and...
Is this nicotine? Jason Rouse?
His name was Henry. No, this is after... this was after Jason Rouse. His name was Henry. He's a great animator. He's done some animations for me. I think he lives in Los Angeles now. And
does he?
And I sometimes, if I knew that I was
Henry Dalton?
Home, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know him.
Have you met Henry? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and sometimes if I knew that if I was home for a longer time and I knew that he was home as well, I would arrange the furniture to give him a corridor.
Yeah.
So he could have a corridor and I could have my massive bedroom.
Oh, yeah. But it's just like that sort of thing is just such a difference when people always talk about, like, can you believe Americans don't travel? And I'm like, yeah, I can. They have so much to see and do in their country. Like in Europe, they're very small and it doesn't change super drastically, JJ. Would you agree? Like if you're traveling through England, like the vibe is slightly more intense as you go more north, but it's still like an English Britishy vibe.
Yeah.
But here is, don't you think it's the same thing?
I mean, California is butt fuck nothing like Colorado and California are very similar political, but very different vibe. Things that the people care about in terms of social issues are totally different. You know what I mean? Like just everything.
To me, well, this I guess place I was feels thinking... like a holiday destination still. I mean, I've been here for 6 years and I still feel like California, things seem so temporary sometimes.
I completely agree with you.
Go to a bar that everybody's like, oh yeah, that bar that we go to all the time. And you go to the bar and you're like, this looks like it's just been built out of two shacks.
It has.
And it's temporary.
But I kind of like, I sort of love the, I like that about LA, in that LA is kind of ever, like it's ever moving, ever changing, but also always the same in that weird way of like certain areas are like, they'll be cool. But that's that area, like, it's cool for 2 years, and then do not live there. Well, yeah. It's like, they found a bunch of heads in front, inside a bunch of people's assholes.
And speaking of the non-religion thing, are you still familiar with Muswell Hill and that O'Neill's Pub? That,
but of course, yeah.
That
yeah.
huge O'Neill's Pub.
That's like a church.
It used to be a gorgeous church.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's a travel podcast, but you got to let
me in. This is the epitome of showing how the British are over religion and then conservative, because they have this gorgeous church. It's beautiful, isn't
gorgeous.
It? Like stained glass windows and everything. It is not a church anymore.
It is like a gorgeous, like one of like a restored, not a cathedral, but like would have been a beautiful neighborhood Church of English church.
Yeah.
And it's a chain. It's like the equivalent of a Chili's now. Do you understand?
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
and it's
like,
still got the gorgeous glasswork and everything.
Like, I've gone in there for lunch more than once because you're like, it's just such a beautiful aesthetic.
Beautiful aesthetic for your five pound happy hour cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Guinness.
When they call the people for takeout, do they go like,
they do,
number 44 ready.
I love that venue. I take people to it.
Oh my god!
Like I can't, and especially if I have an American.
But it's a Chili.
It's an O'Neill's, but it's not an O'Neill's. It's a steakhouse now. By the way, it's no longer an O'Neill's.
See, now that's fucking rad.
I'm updating it. It's a steakhouse, so it's got a proper like wine rack and stuff.
So it's an outback.
No. So now it's sort of like
it'll be nicer.
Here's the thing that
it's so beautiful.
Yeah. You also can't transfer American chains in the same way, like because America, like this sounds crazy, but there's a bunch of regulations that you guys just don't have. So like, the food and stuff like that can literally be like fucking chemicals in a lab.
Yeah.
Like England's heading that way now because all of the EU regulations are gone. But when JJ and I lived there, it was everything had to be a certain level of fresh because of EU regulations and all that sort of stuff.
Got it.
It's like a nice steakhouse now, but it's a gorgeous venue anyway that does make, you could have a 99 cent store in there, it would be the nicest 99 cent.
Like even if it was a Chili's, you would still be like, we got it. Actually,
yeah, it's nice Chili.
It is. It's crazy. Like, why is this a Denny's?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
That's what
yeah,
I
yeah.
always thought about it the time I've been there, where I'm like,
yeah.
Why did they let them do this? Like, you know what I mean?
And then as you travel around Britain, you go, oh, you've done this to a lot of your churches.
Yeah, because they
turns
just
out
they
religion
sold them off.
Well, because they
anymore.
Left to the to America.
And what's even crazier is America has a huge amount of that, in that a lot of those sort of traditional brick and mortar churches are not popular, but the giant mega dome,
mega church. Yeah.
Mega churches are now a part of it. And it's what's interesting. This has nothing to do with travel, but I just find it interesting.
It doesn't matter.
Because of Roe v. Wade, there's like huge scrutiny on those communities, and the first time there hasn't been in for a long time. It's like, wait a minute, this like this fucking football stadium in Houston, Texas, run by a smiling fuck, just deciding legislation for our whole country just because. And it's like, yeah, they got a lot of money. How do you think this shit works? Because JJ, you and I have mostly done Europe and Australia, right?
So you lived with him in England, but you're not from England.
I'm from Canada.
From
the capital of Canada.
And we never lived together. But we're neighbors.
Yeah, we were semi neighbors. I was getting myself established, and you were closer with one of my. I lived in a comics house, in an area called Haringey, and JJ, you knew one of the many roommates in there, Paul Meyerhog. Because I remember, like, we first hung out a bunch at parties because we used to have these crazy fun barbecues at our place. And then, yeah.
And what did you decide to move to England? Like, was it, like, because of, like, what he did as well?
Similar. It's like Canada, there's only so far you can go as a comedian. So I'd done comedy for 4 years. And it was cheap as shit then to move to the UK. It was $250 for a 2-year visa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then, like, Bob's your uncle fucking.
And it's crazy how busy you can get in London and Manchester, I'd say, those two cities. And now, I guess there is a couple others. I hear Glasgow's really busy now, too. But just all these shows on Monday nights and Tuesday night, you're nonstop. You're really immersed into the lifestyle of. and comedy. Yeah.
And JJ was there for a lot more of a boom than I was. I came literally as the stand-up comedy boom. Like I was at the Edinburgh Festival where you could hear the wave smoke the shore because the Olympics came to London and attendance went in half at that festival.
Oh, really?
And has barely ever recovered. A lot of their metrics are used.
Wow.
From that point forward and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and it was because of the Olympics?
Because half of the population that usually attend that festival, because their rhythm was, we always go to the Edinburgh Festival and stuff, like that was broken. And so, and then it's been because of economic factors, such as them leaving the world's largest trade bloc has drastically shrunk it. The amount of people wanting to see comedy in the UK has gotten smaller and smaller, which is to say, not to say that it wasn't an amazing experience, but it was just two very different, like, entrees in.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have, like, so I was there in the early 2000s as well, so I don't know what your date is when you came over, but also there wasn't these mega stand-up TV shows either.
See,
they hadn't been created yet.
So I came 2012.
Yeah, so all of a sudden you had these shows, do they do them in America? But you had these shows in these big theaters, and they were regular television shows, and that kind of killed, it didn't kill the clubs, but it drove away the club interest a little bit.
That's very interesting.
Because people were being given these...
they didn't have to go.
On these bigger shows.
Because
the shows were smaller before then. There was like Live at the Comedy Store and Live at Jongleurs. So all the shows kind of made you want to go to the Comedy Store or go to Jongleurs.
Yeah.
And that's the way TV was selling stand-up comedy for the boom years. And then as soon as, I love Michael McIntyre, but as soon as Michael McIntyre's Roadshow and the Apollo goes hugely mainstream, then people want that theater stand-up experience.
That's a very interesting, prescient point, because it made a shitload of stars, like Michael McIntyre's Roadshow and Live at the Apollo.
Yeah.
That's so true, is that because it was before there were the clubs really had this amazing amount of power. And what was interesting was I watched... sort of, it was the tale of how do you fucking manage when you're the big dog in stand-up comedy, and then as something else sort of takes over, how do you kind of reclaim it? And I've never seen, the Comedy Store in London did such an amazingly interesting correction. So by the time it got to 2015, 2016, they had missed that crop of famous people that were made famous on shows that JJ are talking about, because they went, well, we don't need them. We've got fucking killers. We don't need...
Yeah.
Then, because our business model is, our logo is famous. The people we book are always the best in the country. Everyone leaves totally fucking happy. We can afford our fucking rent in one of the most expensive postal codes. And then they didn't even, I think, saw a dip in the audience. They just noticed all these the next crop of famous people weren't like everyone else dropping by, being part of the furniture, all that sort of stuff. And they immediately realized, we need to make a correction. And they fucking flung the books open and brought in... like the next three generations and are making a correction. So when we're talking about the boom being bust, it's not like there isn't a huge industry over there. It just used to be insane as a touring comedian. And I got sort of the last taste of it because you could literally go all over Europe, all over the UK, like every weekend, like all day, every day. Like I was never home.
Wow.
No, yeah, and there's extra shows. The boom had, you do three shows at a club on a Saturday night, and then that went away. It's not a bad thing that it went away, but then
you're going now to London now?
I'm going to London in a couple weeks.
And then what are you going to do then?
No, we're not doing any comedy. Me and JJ are sit under a bridge.
Hang out. Well, I guess that is. I think I have a lot of Thursday, Friday, Saturdays booked. But you do have to get used to. So during the boom, Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays, we're all booked up. Probably
it was easy.
Minimum two shows a night. And now it's a lot down to Friday, Saturday, because Thursdays are often these touring shows of these TV shows.
Yeah, or they also just people aren't going.
Yeah, so it's just dwindled. It's dwindled down like that, but it's still
so it's
good.
It's just so
it's still awesome. It's one of those things where I think that it's going to be like, speaking of geopolitical, economic things, which you never think would affect stand-up comedy, but they really do. It's one of those things where I think it's going to be interesting the next 5 years, America versus Britain, because I think Britain's in for a bit more of a world of hurt than even America is.
Why?
Because Britain left the European Union, and we're all about to head into a
recession,
economic sluggish recession. So the bigger you are, the easier you can weather that.
Of course.
Because you can dictate prices. It said the UK is just now one country
on
its own.
Yeah, yeah.
In a reality where, There's a shitload of countries that, like, yeah. So it's I don't know what's going to happen. I'm interested to see this summer trip for no other reason than, like, I'm busy too. I want it to be great, but I just, like, it's now I'm just worried about the audience. I'm also going to do the Edinburgh Festival, and I'm just, yeah. I have no idea.
And that's, you've done this before.
This will be my 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Be my ninth one.
Oh, wow. So yeah, you're a veteran to that. You already know how to do it.
Because,
I mean, he tells me all this stuff that, or like a little bit has told me, like, all the stuff that you got to, like, organize and do everything.
Yeah,
like,
it's weird. It's also
a little tricks.
That festival has changed. I would love.
It changes year to year.
There's
changes that you won't even be ready for yet.
Oh.
That'll be when you get there. Because I swear, man, last time I did it was 2019. And I swear I didn't realize how it had shifted to an earlier evening. Festival.
And that was just that was the year.
Oh, before it was really, during the day?
No.
My time slot was 10:15 at night, and I was excited. I was like, that's the rock and roll time. That's awesome. My best shows in Edinburgh, like in 2008 and 2009, I was on at 11:15 at night one of those years, and it was awesome. My rooms were packed. So getting 10:15 in 2019, I was really excited. And the audiences weren't around. And I just noticed the audiences are all there at 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. that year in 2019. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, my God, it's turned into an earlier.
And I think this year now is going to be even fucking earlier.
Really? Mm. See, it's hard to predict. But that would be one of my, if I had to advise somebody, I'd be like, get a 7 p.m. time slot or something, which was not my advice a couple years ago.
It's so funny. I literally remember sitting when in July of 2019, in Paul's flat, and you told me your time, and you're like, I'm pretty excited. I remember being like, I was like, aren't you a bit worried you're a bit late? And you're like, it's a bit. I remember, and it was even, because in my head, it's always, you never go after 11 for a 1 hour show. Before that, you can do okay.
Mm. Right.
And then I remember seeing you after and being like, 10:15. Yeah. But it just changes. Like, because like when JJ started going, there were four big venues, and that was it. I assume.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. The Underbelly didn't exist until I was about 5 years in.
That's correct. So it was literally the Pleasance. So there's a bunch of venues within this festival. It's gigantic. So there were the Pleasance, Gilded Balloon, and Assembly, and that's it.
And the Gilded Balloon didn't have the. So there's the. Edinburgh
By the way,
University.
This is like, just to kind of like, if you can, and also for the audience to clarify what it. Because in my mind, I'm thinking like a huge field and just a bunch of tents.
No. Like, so picture a city of almost of like 600,000, 700,000 people.
Okay.
Now imagine you add another 500,000 people.
Wow.
That do not live there. That's a half a million tourists.
Got it.
Every day for a month. There's 500,000 additional people in a old Northern Europe medieval city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can I just...
But then the venues are like actual like clubs.
I want to tell them about
like
the venues.
Made
okay, wait,
up.
Wait.
So if this area around the Comedy Store was part of the Edinburgh Festival, what would happen?
I went to the JFL Festival. So like, is that a little bit like that in Montreal? Kind of like when it started packed and walking around to from.
So the festival site when you went to JFL, where they had it, it's in the you stay at that hotel,
mm-hmm.
and then across. From you, they have that little area, and there's like a couple of venues scattered.
Yeah.
That is ripped off. The design of that was taken from the Edinburgh venue, the Pleasance, and was attempt to be applied. Think of what you think of Just for Laughs and times it by 100%.
Wow.
So to JJ's point.
Yeah. Like if you were here hanging out at the Comedy Store and having a drink, you wouldn't just be going to shows here. You would be going that hotel next door.
There would be five venues.
There would be five shows in there.
Sky Bar.
The one across the street.
Just everything is a venue.
Yeah. Function rooms are rooms because Edinburgh University is the campus of the festival as well. And that when I started at the Edinburgh Festival, it wasn't part of the festival. But now all these Edinburgh University rooms, auditoriums, classrooms
are just part of it.
All venues. Mm, they're all rooms.
And now, like, I'm playing in the wine cellar of a steakhouse. They literally just.
Oh, wow.
They go in, they pipe and drape it, they put in a sound system, and it doesn't matter. Like, it's one of those things where, and I like that aspect of it.
That's
it
cool. Yeah.
It's cool. It also, like, it can be also fucking tough.
Well, did you get that? Did you choose that, or you got it? It's like, this is what you get.
It's, I chose that because it. Okay, so.
Because you already been there a while, so you got like more stature.
And JJ, correct me if I'm wrong. So it's basically how it works is the festival, if the festival is the country, mm-hmm. the venue is the state,
okay.
then your room would be the city.
Right.
You're picking.
Yeah.
So it starts with, I'm going to Edinburgh. I've picked my country.
Yeah.
Now, there are four big states there, which are called the Gilded Balloon, the Pleasance, the Underbelly, and Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was sort of, so that's like the big four. Those each have about 200 rooms.
Oh, wow.
No, that's a lie. They can do about 100 shows, 200 shows
that's
a day.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
Something around there, like between 50 and 200 shows, let's say spread out.
Shows, but like, and in this, how many rooms are in this venue? In this
30? I'd say, yeah, 30 rooms. Okay. 30 rooms with so 12 hours of shows.
Got 30 it, rooms, 12 hours of shows. And then after that, you have like the Free Fringe, which is Laughing Horse and PBH, which is just a different economic setup. Those rooms are literally anything they could find.
Mm.
So, like, I know people that performed on a bus
and.
In an active pub, in a fucking closet in a hotel, like insane stuff.
Yeah.
Then you have just the Tonic, which is literally a guy named Daryl, and he has control of a couple of venues. And so there's that. I'm with a company called Monkey Barrel, which is one of the two comedy clubs that operates year round in Edinburgh.
And they're a new exciting upstart.
And they're a new exciting upstart that started in 2017, maybe?
Yeah, and they actually... They found a little corner of Edinburgh that was had less shows. It just had a couple shows.
They did it very smart. They just picked a street. They just took a street that had sort of three venues, which is not a lot for that festival, and just slowly beep, grab, 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 grab.
Oh, got it.
Turned, so you can actually, you feel like you're in the Monkey Barrel area when you're down there and seeing shows and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's a...
I think it's well done, and then... And then, of course, the Stand Comedy Club.
And then you have the Stand Comedy Club.
The city's actual comedy club.
Yeah.
They run shows.
So does it matter? Is there like the venue that you want to perform, or does it matter? It always switches.
Things do matter. I think air conditioning is important.
I think air conditioning is very important.
I would highly recommend a venue with air conditioning.
Seeing as I almost went into kidney failure because of the heat of a room.
Especially because if you got five shows before you, all those people come
in, warm and
out.
The
venue is just warm. You can open those doors all you want and try to get some air circulating, but
without
air conditioning, you'd regret it after the first week.
And also,
so that's important, I think.
And like Soma and the air conditioning units never work. It's
But
crazy.
About, is there like one like that's like the like more of a name of a venue like
no
like...
so it's much like comedy clubs in LA in that you know the big three are always in the mix and it's just whoever's
hot that day you
can't really predict it. It's also like certain people, the idea is you should never change venue because people won't be able to find you,
right?
I don't really prescribe to that one, but I did for many years. There was a whole thing of you had to be with the big four, which was way more from JJ's time than my time.
Yeah.
And it
is true that some people do just, I don't think it's a lot, but some people do just go to the Pleasance or go to them. Like, I like spending my day at this venue because they give me, I like their burgers and I like their air conditioning and I like their thing. So that does happen as well. So I guess maybe you do lose some people, but I don't think it's a major thing, though. I think I'm with you on that.
It can't be that many people.
Yeah, it's not as important. But yeah, it's crazy. And it's a real lottery. Like the Counting House, for example, is a venue that's in behind the Gilded, one of these major ones we told you about. And I have seen the Counting House. It used to be an independent venue back 15, 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes the Gilded Balloon, which is one of the major four, sometimes they take it on, or sometimes the assembly rooms will adopt it for a festival.
Yeah, or sometimes it's like Free Fringe. And,
yeah.
Sometimes it's so
like,
interesting.
It's like an orphan every year. Like, who are they going to be with this year? And then every year it's different. I have seen it be the hottest venue in Edinburgh. I've seen it just rammed show after show, but then I've also seen it like a ghost town.
Yeah.
Immediately the next year. And I'm like, how do you...
So is the venues, are they correlated with the people, like with the comics, or like is the venue bringing the people, or is that a combination of the comic
and the... I think it's a combination, but I think the main attributable factor is usually a venue will be suddenly thought to be cool, because it'll get 3 to 4, pardon me for yawning, oh God!
No,
it'll get 3 to 4 hot shows,
mm-hmm.
and then it fucking becomes like, well, you gotta play whistle piss because Jim Potato got nominated for King of Comedy there back in 1887. It only costs $8 million. Like, it's just like the amount of that that gets thrown at you. Here's what you realize, and here's my advice to anyone doing those big large scale festivals that I've done and that JJ's done, and you know, if Francisco really works hard,
yeah,
we will not help him do any of them. No, just kidding, come on. Is that what it all that matters is just do a good show and be in a place where people can find you with a chair that's facing the stage, and if you can get a light on you at on the stage, yeah, then you're kind of
And the other thing, you're ahead of the game. Yeah, I would also say you just got to stay optimistic too, but you got to be good to your staff.
And oh my God.
Some people forget that.
Oh my
that
God, yeah, you do.
Because it's a 4-week
Because they're the ones running the same thing, right?
Yeah, but
they're running different shows at the same venue. Mm.
And they're also the ones running the box office when all these people from all around the world, you know, or Westerners are coming up on their holidays and they're going, what show should I see? And if they go, oh, Francisco was just here, he seems in a great mood, go see Francisco Ramos.
Oh, yeah, they're the ones who push. Yeah, they're the push. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's
they're
easy.
The marketing.
Because it can be as an artist and performer, yeah. it and if you've had a rough week, it can't you see some of the artists do it when they're like, "What are my sales tonight?" Oh, you know, and they do that to the box office.
Here's what
I do. It's not their hell. It's not their fault. Yeah.
I bribe them.
I give them donuts.
I bring donuts. So
you're not paying them. The venue is paying them.
Yeah. I mean, and some venues, the venue is not paying them. Some venues, they're volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so what I will do is I will go to in the UK, they have something called the Chalky Bicky Isle, which is where all the chocolate biscuits are because they have so many more chocolate biscuits than America.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking go down there with a shopping cart. Just every venue I have something to do with. And I literally just get like a shitload of chocolate and go for a walk. How you doing? How you fucking? And just hand it the fuck out. They may not even know why they're just doing, but they will remember you and it.
And that's just not the venue that you're performing, but any venue.
No, it's all the venues I perform.
Okay,
yeah.
I've never played the underbelly, and they have gotten no candy from me.
Yeah.
The other thing that you want to do, which so many performers do not do, is you want to introduce and be nice to security, because you're gonna need to get people out of your room, and you want them on your side. Like,
of course.
Yeah, and they're all glad. Do you know this? You know where the fringe? You know who those security guards that are all around the venues that are all in those black fleeces with the, and they all look just kind of fucking like dusty old men.
And one crazy girl. She's there every year.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know fucking exactly.
By the way, I like you, but you're fucking
nuts. She's fucking intense.
She's
so all the ones around the Pleasance are all Glasgow penitentiary officers that take the month off and come do this.
Oh, wow. So they're like really like security.
They are really security. And then the Gilded Balloon was a mix of those guys and then a bunch of people from an MMA gym.
No.
Including a tiny woman. So I was hosting a late night show there for many years called Late and Live. And
It's the biggie.
And a guy wanted to fight security. He was like, I'm not leaving. What are you going to fucking do? And it was one of the most cool things I've ever seen, which was he was like, what are you going to fucking do? And they were like, step outside. We'll fucking do this. And apparently, I didn't see this, but like he like got up all fucking cool. And they all just walked and they just stood there was, I can't remember her name, but the female security guard who like rolled up his sleeves. He was like, what's this? And they were like, you're fighting her. And he apparently just was like, no, I can't hit a woman. And then like she was just like, so you can call someone a cunt. It was like apparently this whole fucking thing.
I've seen her break people. I have seen her break people.
Because there's two now. There's,
is she
the young one?
She Thor? Is she Natalie Portman and Thor?
No, she is the one in
without
Thor.
Okay. CGI, without no CGI needed.
Yeah, no, my God.
Because she likes me a little bit.
Oh yeah.
So I've had to.
Have you had a one night stand with her?
I feel like if
I have felt her grip.
On what portion of your manhood did you?
So what
feel
did she
her...
did she do this? She's like camera. He's like JJ.
JJ, would you
a little bit of that?
JJ, would you describe that she has a kung fu grip?
She did indeed.
You do seem like the kind of person that like a very scary security guard woman would walk up and fucking grab your dick. I like me too. I gotta get the fuck out of here. Oh, jeepers, creepers.
She was intense.
Oh, wow. So
Go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah. So I wanted to ask another question because I like this thing about, because I want to learn. I think also the viewers will learn about what the Edom first, because you guys know about it. As a comic, what's the, why would you want to do the Edinburgh Festival in terms of like what does it do for your career? What does it do for like your stand up or your, so, or if you want to work in a one man show?
I go
whatever.
First.
You go first.
I'll go first with a quick one. Here's one of the quickest ones is that it's 28 days. So it's like training at high altitude because you're doing these shows and you're
every
going,
day.
You're going through all these ups and downs and you're honing it every day. You emerge from that month. Having gone through heartbreak and having gone through successes, and you're just, it's like 10 months of experience or even a year experience compacted into 1 month. So that's one of the most important things I would say.
I would say, that is that it's in terms of experience, in terms of becoming a better comedian and performer, there's nothing better. It's literally just 28 days in very difficult circumstances with a lot of stuff stacked against you, and the expectation is that you will fucking nail it because there are other people who have the exact same limitations you have, and they are nailing it, and you are aware of it. That, if you want to play any other country in the world that isn't in North America or South America, you have to go to the...
That's where you get booked, people, bookers.
They're all there. They're all there. In terms of... depending on how long you go, you may want to adjust your career to where you are a person that you make a good portion of your or a portion of your income doing festivals. As a comedian, that's something I do. Some people do cruise ships. I do these festivals. It's one of those things where it's giving me an early death because of the amount of stress in the run-up. Because it's it's like you're planning a tour, but you're just not moving venues. Like it's like a lot of admin and logistics to it, and a lot of X factors to it. But it's incredibly important to your career. It's completely different. It exposes you to a new audience. It creatively pushes you. It physically taxes and pushes you. It also gets you out of your comfort zone completely, especially if you're an American comedian.
Yeah, of course.
There is this sense with all things in America, which it's not a detraction. You guys are the behemoth culturally in the world, but there is a sense of, well, I haven't heard of it, so it can't be a thing. There are Michael McIntyre was the third or fourth biggest grossing comedian in the world, and he only performed in the UK when they did that list. Like,
wow.
There is a huge comedy industry outside of North America that North America, by the way, some people are aware of. They just whatever. And it's great to be exposed that way. If you want to tour Australia, Edinburgh is weirdly the big door to do that. And it's just all those sort of things. So it's just kind of...
Yeah, there might be a huge audience waiting for you.
Yeah.
You know, a Spanish-speaking audience
probably
waiting for you, and you'll be able to discover them through a channel like Edinburgh, for sure.
And, and it's just, again, it's one of those things where the most important thing, and this is just for anyone who's doing it, my, I think, advice in comedy is really stupid because it's a... it's an art form that sort of can be anything for the person. That said, if you're going to do the Edinburgh Festival, and JJ will back me up on this... You're going to cry. You're going to have a day where you're going to cry. Don't fucking fuck with me. You're going to cry.
Was it because the security?
JJ cried because of the security guard grabbing his dick with kung fu grip. I cried because she didn't. And you have to lean into it because it's so emotionally taxing. And also,
week is the same.
No fucking day is the... And the shit that like happens... Like I had 20 people walk out of a show.
Whoa.
At a time.
You try and do an hour
with 20 people walking out one at a time.
And...
Like, I have had people try and attack me. I've had people, I had someone smuggle in a baby. I have had people,
I had a woman pass out.
Oh, my God.
And so I was at the Underbelly 1 year, and I had this woman pass out. And they call it the catacombs because it used to be places where they burned bodies during the plague.
JJ, you've misremembered, and it's much worse. It's where they kept all the bodies during the plague, which is why those bricks have like microbiome, or they have like fucking people have gotten scarlet fever and medieval disease, and they're like, "Where were you?" And he was like, "Edinburgh," and they're like, "Where?" And because they have to and they're like, "Oh, it's in the." That's why you go into that thing now. It's plastic on all the walls because people were getting fucking typhoid.
Wow.
So I'm in this venue. You have to fucking. It's hard to get into, right? So my audience is in there. This woman passes out. We had to wait for a stretcher to come to help her. So the show is just on hold, and I'm just like chatting with the audience. It's not feeling very funny.
And this is between, like, how long has it started? Like, when?
I was about 15 minutes in. So, like, not enough, but it was just so hot because this, I think I was on at 8 p.m. this year.
You didn't have AC?
There's been no, there was no air conditioning.
I mean, when you say has to have air conditioning, by the way, what rooms at that festival have air conditioning?
Yeah, I wonder if it's an old.
The university ones do.
No. Oh, so if you're in the assembly rooms, they all have them.
The assembly rooms, the and the university portions that have the gilded balloon. Those will have air conditioning. Like that whole square?
Yeah.
Those are all air conditioned rooms. And the stand has started doing air conditioning, like the police academy.
Can you bring an AC, like a little portable?
It's Europe. They don't have the setup in the same
It's hard. You can buy popsicles.
Like, the thing is, you have to understand, like, the buildings were old.
Yeah, yeah.
Before America was a country.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I know that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like some of the buildings don't have a place to use the bathroom.
So all I was going to say was this lady passes out, but the fire escape to the venue that I'm in was a spiral staircase. So they took this lady on the stretcher out of my room, and I restarted the show.
Yeah.
And then about 5 minutes into me restarting the show, they came back into the room. They had to go across. It was like a fucking sketch. Like, they're just taking her back, and everybody's still gasping, and she does a little wave, and they turn it out. But you have to, you just learn to be ready for fucking
everything.
Yeah.
I had a day. I was using a wireless microphone. The show, because I was trying to be a wanky cat. Where 12 people were ejected before I walked on stage and they started heckling. They'd come from another show to try and derail the show. Had that happen a few times.
Okay.
They got kicked out. That took 25 minutes. Ugh. History of the Pleasance, one of only, I think, three shows where every security guard on site was in my room physically fighting 12
wow.
people to get them out. They come out. The lighting board then has a fit. Every light turns on. Mm-hmm. You don't know how fucking bright that is until that happens. They have to shut down power to the room. Then finally, we're now. I'm still on joke one of half of an hour long thing. There's 20 minutes left.
Yeah,
I'm about to start, and my headset picks up the police band, and they literally are like, "What the fuck?"
Oh shit!
And my favorite part is I walk on. This is how fucked up was the Ember Festival. Is I spotted a reviewer. And I said to my producers, that review is not to come out. And the reviewer was like, that's not ethical. How dare you? I'm reviewing that show. And I was like, you didn't see the show.
There's no show.
Yeah. You saw me riffing. No, you can't put it out. And then they were like, well, I'm not coming back. And I went, great. Don't come back.
Oh, wow.
And then he will review it like it's like that every night.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the security guard starts beating up the hecklers.
No, no. I don't mind if they're like that. What I hate is when it's like, and he couldn't handle this. And it's like, motherfuckers. Yeah. I read a review once where I had been in the show and they were like, couldn't handle the situation. And they did not paint
what the situation was.
Where it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also not every comedian should have to fucking deal
of course.
With your fucking misbehavior. That's a very American attitude, Franco. Franco.
Yeah, I like
Franco. So sorry.
I think it's very important, too, that we mention that a lot of these reviewers are fucking amateurs, too.
JJ's opinion as someone who is not attending the 2022 Edinburgh Festival. I would like it to be known that I do not agree with one JJ Whitehead. I find them all to be quality individuals.
But when you say that, that's the attitude of that. It's like you mean like of like somebody respecting the show.
Yeah, but what JJ is discussing is a lot of the journalists that end up at the Edinburgh Festival are very new to journalism. They're students. This is their first or second assignment because they just need people to review.
Got it.
Or it's a different department because there isn't that much money in print journalism anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're now the reviewer. Mm-hmm. That's all it basically is.
Okay.
These are my thoughts.
And also they get more attention with negative reviews. Sometimes.
Well, of course.
So
I mean, that's
sometimes is a quota of like I need to.
I've never known if that's so fucking evil.
I know, but it's true. You can't be too.
But it's good PR. It also all PR works.
You know what
I mean?
In the end, all you need is the one good sentence. So you can twist. You know, like somebody can. I'm sure on my posters, I probably have good quotes from a 2-star review.
Oh,
I think we all do. I think you learn to go, oh, He said I was entertaining. Okay.
A guy, I can't remember who it was. I used to know the name, but someone back when it was just the Scotsman reviewed, he got a 1-star, like, fuck this guy review. And he wrote, put on his poster, a star, the Scotsman, and sold out. It's the best fucking movie.
Wow. Cause oh, because you grab the reviews and you put them in your poster.
So what you'll see is, as the week progresses, all of these posters that comedians
They get covered in the reviews.
So people can go like, what?
So when people are like, should I see this thing? It's like, oh, it's got so many good reviews.
And then the real trick is to go ahead and get reviewed now. I don't know if you know about this, JJ. The real trick now is you get reviewed in London. So people who are rocking up with like 4 reviews done.
Yeah.
That,
you know what?
So you're already coming with those reviews before the festival starts.
Yeah.
Which is can be sneaky. But that's never, I've had that a couple of times. I had somebody reviewed me in Melbourne and then released it in Edinburgh as if it was as if they had seen my Edinburgh show. And it angered me a bit because it wasn't the same venue, the show was different. I was doing like Australian, like the show was thematically.
So the review wasn't good?
The review, I think.
Because if it would have been good, if it was
fine. Here's the problem with
it. I tell you what, it was one of my hottest years, and I was I was straight 5 stars, 5 stars across the board, and I was killing it.
So,
and
like,
this
you're
guy,
like,
you know who?
We'll talk about it after. I bet you I know who it is.
But just decided to derail my momentum. Like, I was killing it, and then he went and he just gave me like a 3-star. It was just
I'm gonna.
It was just like, it's okay, but every reference in his review was like had to do with Melbourne, and I was like, I'm not in fucking Melbourne. I'm here in Edinburgh.
I'm surprised that they didn't have that take. Like, if you released it that late, I'm surprised that
I know. And it's the same thing I've seen. I asked them to take it down, and they were like, no, it's against the artistic or the journalistic.
Well, why did PR? Did you have a PR? Then I would have been like, PR, go have it taken down. Yeah. I can't. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
But this is the thing. Everybody's trying to get their little bit of attention, and that's what these reviewers are trying to do, too. And so they've just gone, oh, I reviewed him at another festival. I'll use that one.
Mm. The thing with the reviews, it's been very hard to stick to, but I did it in 2019.
But does it matter now still, or because now it's more...
At the festival, it 100% matters because you're
social...
fighting every day for people's...
Let's say now with like social media and followers and stuff like that.
But it's not the same situation because it's not... It's real-time social media. Your followers are the people in your room at showtime.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tweet it out all the time, but that's not... That's assuming that all your followers are in Edinburgh, Scotland
at that time. Yeah.
So the metric doesn't work the same way. It's also social media has not been as widely adopted in the rest of the world in the same way it has in North America.
Also, like, social media is for the world, isn't it? But those posters that are hanging in the courtyard, those are for people who are there.
Yeah, of course. And they're not. It's true. It's like when you go as a tourist, you know, like when I was like in Italy, like if I'm walking in a street, I'm looking at their restaurants. I'm like, yeah, that one looks bad. You know, whatever. I'm not looking, I'm like, it's my followers or whatever.
It's also that thing of in the time of COVID, subscribed or prescribed, I'm not sure which word works, but this magic to social media, you know what I mean? Where it's kind of like, well, if you have all of this, it's like the amount of people that are actually using or retaining any information from those things are fucking tiny.
Yeah, of course it is. It's like you need to literally have like 10 million followers to have like a dent of like, you know, like I think we were talking about like with like, for example, like Louis C.K., how he sells his specials online, you know, he can do that because he's got like 10 million followers. So even if like 1% of those followers buy, it's still I got money. But like if you have like 100, you know, let's say 500,000 followers, that's gonna turn, you know, it could be just 500 people.
But wouldn't it all
drop
in
the ocean?
But also, I think that Louis C.K. has nothing to do with the amount of followers he has in terms of social media. I think what it is it's his email list. From before the great Me Too booting of, I mean, he's got a Grammy. I don't think he's, if people tried to cancel him, it didn't work. and here's the thing.
Yeah, and also he has his true fans.
But it's not even that. It's just he did that. He was the first person to do that. True. That's the other thing. So it's just he has the ability and the means to do it. And he has that pipeline that was sort of always there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that everyone needs to realize, and the Elon Musk trying to buy Twitter thing should have really illustrated the point that social media is a lot less permanent than we all thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, totally invest in music because it's the thing of the now. But it's one of those things where, like, I see some people, like that are that's their whole strategy in the show business. And I just worry where it's like,
it ain't gonna.
That might, that, listen, that may be the future, and I'm totally wrong. I could be totally wrong. But it just, it's like, this is a, this is, there's so, like, there's gonna be something else.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's a different game. It's a, it's a, it's related. It's related, but it's a different, you know, skill set. In fact, you can ask people at your shows who came here because they saw me on social media, and the numbers will be low.
Yeah.
People come because they have their own established ways of finding out shows, or they like that comedy club, or they like that venue, or they saw an advert.
But I think it's what we're saying. I think the, maybe like in the U.S. that has more applied quickly, quicker.
Well, the biggest thing with the U.S., and this is the biggest thing, was this is when I was running a show in L.A., and I would ask every person who came in
how they
heard about it. 99% said, you gave me a flyer, or they said, I saw the poster when I was here before. And I wanted to come back.
Hmm.
As much as it's social media, smushes all of that, we are like we are on the Sunset Strip. Look at the amount of Marvel posters for movies. They don't need, like, no one who is driving on this stretch of road, they're either coming here to do comedy or they're going to work at like the eight agencies down the road. It's simply to remind people of going, oh, yeah, Miss Marvel. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Social media, does not feel the same
as
when someone hands you a piece. Why do you think they still have that guy with the arrow?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which, by the way, we haven't told you that, but you have to buy flyers and stuff in Edinburgh.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we haven't even... Did we not even talk about the flyer in the poster? Oh, my God.
Yeah, so never mind the social media. You actually have to hire students... Basically, it's students because it's a minimum wage job, and you have to hand them your flyers that you have spent money to print. You have to give them and just trust that they will be out there handing them out to people, and that they're not just going to throw them in a bin, which I'm sure some of them do.
I respect them.
Wow.
I want you guys to know this. How long are we recording for?
We got 3 minutes, so we got eight minutes.
Yeah.
No, three.
Three.
We've been done for a while. We've been doing for a while. He gave us 25 a while back, so we've been going.
50. We're on 53.
Yeah.
All right. I was doing math.
So we got to wrap it up.
When somebody goes like that.
It's a real error when JJ starts doing math. Let me tell you. So happy I threw in that extra couple of buckarooskies on the old parking.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you were about to say? Is that you had paid parking?
No, I got a spot. That's why.
Oh yeah, this is amazing because I like this because I think this is a cool thing that we can show people how that, because I like me, I wanted to know more about the Edinburgh Festival. I know there's a lot of people that want to know more about the Edinburgh Festival. So I think this is great information. So I also like, so if you want to let people know where they can follow you or find your flyers.
Flyers on the streets of Edinburgh during August. Mm-hmm. My show in Edinburgh is at the Monkey Barrel Carnivore 1, 8:15 every day. At the John Hastings on all social media. You can check out my podcast, The Wrestler Review. That is The Wrestler Review, available where all podcasts are found. Or Untitled Twitch Stream, which I do every Sunday, which is a Twitch stream / podcast / I think we're getting a guy to get a tattoo of a Batman bed soon. And that is it. All my albums are streaming on all streaming services, including Spotify.
Nice.
And can I say, buddy, thank you for showing off the scar.
Oh, you like this? Yeah, this is.
Yeah,
I thought
we would talk about it.
Is this like what you need for Edinburgh? You need
On January of 2021, my handlebar snapped going down Western at Adams, and I nearly died.
Yeah. Wow! Bicycle.
Handlebar snapped, landed on the concrete without a helmet. A bus nearly.
Wow!
No. So if this is me on the bike going like this, I went like that.
Oh, she come glue thing you then go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, it was there's a thousand things. Thank God the bus stopped a foot away from my body.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's just
shit, man. And up until then, we had a thing. I thought, what did we do? Twice?
We did it way more than twice. I would say we definitely
we were going to do night biking. You know, it was the middle of the pandemic. We were onto a thing.
We were totally onto a thing.
Empty streets, and we're out there with our bikes.
It was super fun because you can fucking chat, and literally we just weaved through Hollywood. Yeah. And just like all of you, what was also nice about doing that was we'd get onto a story of like, I just remember one time you were like, oh yeah, so when you were working at Jim Jefferson, you're like, actually we're like two blocks away. And then we bike up and you're like, so that was my office. And like, we're doing that.
Right.
I remember like we showed date spots on on that strip going towards Bar Lubitsch of like good bars to go to and stuff like that. So no, it was,
wow.
It was definitely more than, yeah. I would say it was four times.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So that's the only, you just got a scar. What injuries did you have?
I nearly lost my left arm. My elbow was completely broken. My shoulder was completely destroyed. It was repaired with surgery.
Wow.
This elbow was also broken in a different bike accident. JJ helped me, nurse me back from health when I came back from surgery. I wasn't legally allowed to be alone for 12 hours because of the amount of painkillers I was on.
And good drugs.
Such good drugs.
Wow.
Holy shit.
My question though is, how are you doing psychologically? Are you scared of a bike now?
Yeah, I can't get on a bike.
You are still okay.
Oh really?
Well, I'm not scared. Like I love it. I saw you have your bike here. I was so fucking jealous. Where you're like, took it to Sherman Oaks. I was like, that's fucking.
I have biked about 20 miles today.
So fucking.
Yeah, but it's electric.
But still, that's still like.
Oh
it's,
yeah, okay.
It's
but
like,
I'm just saying, I've gone. Everybody else sits in traffic
that's
and
the thing
shit,
that's
man.
So funny
but
about,
I know,
like,
but I just want.
Like,
about,
how is he trying to paint this as a bad?
No, no, because he's saying like. When you say I bike 20 miles in a real bike, that's a lot of fucking biking.
Yeah, but that's
I took my bike out.
But
electric.
But e-bike, it's not like you're literally sitting there on your phone. Like
you have to pedal a shitload.
Yeah, no, e-bikes are one of those things where you go like, this is going to be such a breeze, and you're like, oh, it's just a heavy bike that I have to pedal, and then every once in a while I can go, keek, and then it just goes. Much slower.
Yeah, and it's only gets a 5-hour battery. So coming over the canyon there was I might have to pedal.
Okay.
For those of you, this is a travel podcast, but let me say this. This fucking psycho took the Coldwater Canyon all the way down from Sherman Oaks to here.
Yeah.
It's just such a wild.
It was
vehement LA cyclist. You know what's so fun at night? Is doing exactly what you do. And like in the pandemic, I would.
But with no traffic.
No traffic. Holy shit, is that fun. Like, up and around Griffith Park on a bike, like, especially going to Atwater Village, all those little streets. Oh, so fucking cool. Including there was I only have found it twice, a bike path that's lit, JJ.
Wow.
Through Griffith Park that dumps you down into Los Feliz. I've only ever found it twice. It was amazing. But it's definitely a place where people are burying bodies.
Oh, is it from the Greek theater? No.
No. It connects with that, though. It connects with that road, and that's how you drop down. Right. It's like up there. I found it off the LA River in Burbank.
Yeah.
Like you go back behind the zoo. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. We need to get you back on a bike, man.
Yeah. It's going to happen. It's going
to
happen.
I just start slow, you know, like.
Yeah. Like, I just needed to stop triggering my PTSD, and then I'll be.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, I was talking about that earlier. Like, I've got injuries. It takes a while. You've got your knee? Like, your knee?
Yeah.
Are you 100%? Like, can you jump with
No, of course.
And they say white men can't jump.
Yeah, but it takes a while. Like, I feel that way about, I got some injuries that I'm like,
it's tough. Definitely the psychological aspect of when you get an injury, it takes a while.
It takes a while to get your buddies back.
Well, thank you very much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Should we still ask him our final question?
All right, ask him the last question.
Our last question that we always ask of our guest buddy is your favorite piece of travel advice.
I got it.
Here we go.
Right off, which is, it's very simple. Your hotel room, whatever room you're leaving to head home to your next destination, you take your bag, you prop open your door of whatever that room is, you sweep it, you do a sweep, check everywhere. Take the fucking blanket off the bed. Check all the drawers. Do everything. Just take 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You would be amazed at the amount of chargers you would find. Mm-hmm. The amount of sunglasses.
I always leave a shirt hanging in that closet because I forget about the closet, you know, because you're looking at the whole room and you're always like, oh, fuck, the shirt. I actually, because I don't even hang shit up when I'm at home, but I hang some not one time.
The amount of people, and I also never use the safe. I don't know anyone who's ever used the safe and not then said the following thing. And then I forgot that thing at the hotel.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, I know someone who forgot thousands of dollars in their hotel safe.
Ooh.
And I had to make the decision, do I make this flight or do I go back and get it? And they went back and get it and it was there. But like literally
it was there?
Like,
oh, wow.
Like they had given, like their maid was in the room.
Like,
thank God it was in the safe.
That's a rough one.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
Yes,
we appreciate
you, John.
It.
Everybody, go see John at Edinburgh. He's always amazing at Edinburgh.
Please let us watch and definitely follow us. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on all the social media, Standby Podcast, and listen to us in iTunes so we can climb up the charts. Yes. Thank you very much. What? Váyalo. Yes, thank you.
He said it.